Ekatra Foundation presents the Ekatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really getting into the life and mind of Richard Nathaniel Wright, an incredible American author from the 20th century.
Yeah, a towering figure. And our focus is his autobiography, Black Boy, from 1945.
Which is, well, it's so much more than just a memoir, isn't
it? Oh, absolutely. It's the searing social commentary, yeah, but also a story of survival and, you know, this intellectual awakening that just, it still hits hard today.
It really does.
Black Boy is, I mean, it's foundational, a key text in American literature. And it's just this unflinching look at the psychological cost, the societal cost of systemic racism.
Unflinching is the right word.
Definitely. And Wright's story, it's not just history, it's really a story of intellectual rebellion. You picture this young black kid, right, trying to navigate the Jim Crow South, this brutal system, and he discovers that words can be weapons, books can be salvation. And writing becomes his way, maybe his only way, to change himself and maybe change society, too. He had that quote, didn't he, about not leaving the South to forget it.
Right. But so that someday I might understand how it came to be as it was. Powerful.
Exactly. So our mission here really is to explore how he built an identity through literature, you know, looking for meaning, dignity, freedom.
Yeah.
In a world basically designed to deny him all of that.
That's a great way to frame it. So building on that, let's trace his early life. Where does it start?
Well, he was born in 1908, Mississippi, on a plantation, and his earliest memories, hunger, just this intense, gnawing hunger, and not just for food, though that was definitely there.
Right, literal and metaphorical.
Precisely. His father, Nathan, a sharecropper, he leaves the family pretty early on.
Bye.
So his mother, Ella, she struggles. She's an itinerant domestic worker moving constantly, Mississippi, Arkansas, Tennessee.
So just constant upheaval, perpetual instability.
Exactly. No roots. Imagine that uncertainty for a child. It really sets the stage for his later defiance, I think. Well, that abandonment, the constant struggle, it breeds this fierce independence in him, but also like a deep mistrust of authority, of institutions,
like sis,
and his curiosity, which becomes his great strength, right? It was always getting him into trouble. There's that story.
Oh, the fire.
Yeah, the fire incident. He's only four, playing with straws, accidentally sets the house on fire.
And the reaction was?
A brutal beating, nearly killed him. Establishes this pattern, you know? His curiosity leads to violent conflict, makes him question everything.
And it wasn't just physical hardship you mentioned, there's the religious aspect too.
Oh yeah, big time. His grandmother, Margaret Wilson, and his Aunt Addie in Jackson, Mississippi, Seventh-day Adventists, very rigid.
So their home was complicated.
Sanctuary and prison, yeah. Their strict beliefs, that was one of his first big philosophical battles. It really nurtured that resistance to authority that you see throughout his work.
And there's another unsettling story from that time, the kitten.
Right, the kitten anecdote. He hangs a kitten out of frustration about his absent father. It's raw. It's disturbing. But it shows you just how early that sense of powerlessness and the struggle with power dynamics and this kind of nascent rebellion was forming in him.
It paints such a stark picture, all this pressure, internal and external.
Shit.
And his education was pretty fragmented, right?
Totally fragmented. But that hunger for learning, like you said, it was just insatiable. There was this moment he heard someone read Bluebeard and His Seven Wives, and it just lit up his imagination. He said, I had tasted what to me was life, and I would have more of it somehow, some way.
Wow. So school, even limited school, was important.
It was sustenance, yeah. He was brilliant academically, actually. But even that led to conflict. At Smith Robinson School, he's valedictorian.
Okay.
And the principal, who's black, gives him this pre-written speech to read. Super subservient, designed not to upset the white officials.
Oh, boy. I can imagine how Wright felt about that.
Exactly. So what does he do? Threats, pleas, from family, the principal.
He refused.
He absolutely refused. Insisted on writing and delivering his own speech.
That's incredible. His first real public stand for his own voice.
It really was. Choosing authenticity over safety, saying, basically, my mind is my own. It set the pattern, didn't it? For future fights against anyone trying to shut him up.
A declaration of independence, really. But let's talk more about books. The power of literature for him. It was huge.
Monumental. Remember, in Memphis, he's a teenager barred from the public library because he's black.
Right.
So he finds this white co-worker, Mr. Falk, who's sympathetic. And he gets him to let him use his library card.
That took guts.
And then he forges this note using the horrific language of the time, but it's this act of defiance. Please let this nigger boy have some books.
This unbelievable audacity.
And it works. He gets books by Mencken, Dreiser, Sinclair Lewis. Mencken, especially.
What was it about Mencken?
Mencken showed him words could be weapons. Precise, sharp weapons against injustice. He said he hungered for books, new ways of looking and seeing. Literature wasn't just escape. It was a toolkit for understanding his world.
That act, forging the note, getting those books,
yeah,
it was more than just reading, wasn't it?
Oh, it was the real start of his self-education, his intellectual freedom. He realized his own anger, his alienation wasn't just his. Mencken gave him a language for it. It fired up his ambition to write.
And that hunger drove him north, right? The Great Migration.
Yeah, 1927, heads to Chicago, looking for the promised land.
Which wasn't quite so promising, I gather.
Well, different kinds of racism, different economic struggles. He worked all sorts of menial jobs, postal clerk, hospital attendant.
I kept writing.
Obsessively, relentlessly honing his craft in every spare moment.
And then he found a community.
Eventually. He joined the Communist Party in 33. That gave him an intellectual circle, political framework, got his early stuff published.
Poems, stories.
Right. And then came the breakthrough. Uncle Tom's Children in 1938. Collection of novellas.
It did well.
It did, but Wright felt maybe it was too easy for white readers to digest. He wanted something harder, more unflinching.
Which led to Native Son.
Exactly. 1940, massive success. Mm. Made him famous, wealthy, first book of the month club pick by a black author. It just shattered people's preconceptions.
And then Black Boy in 45, cementing that reputation.
Yeah.
Using his own story to analyze racism's deep psychological impact.
Yep. But even with all that success, America, it was still suffocating for him. So 1947, he moves to Paris.
Seeking artistic freedom.
Totally. Connected with Sartre, Simone de Beauvoir, that whole intellectual scene.
In his later years.
He kept writing, got really interested in African independence movements. But there was also this growing isolation, people said.
Right.
He died pretty young, actually. Paris, 1960, only 52. Just as the civil rights movement was really taking off back home, left a huge void.
And the full autobiography, American Hunger, covering the Chicago years, that came out later.
Posthumously, yeah. 1977 gives you the complete picture.
What a life.
Yeah.
Just packed with intensity. So let's dig deeper. What was really driving him? You mentioned that hunger.
Yeah, it seems central. And it operated on like three levels, you could say.
Okay.
First, the obvious one, physical hunger. That literal emptiness from his childhood. It taught him about desperation, injustice, survival economics, and it fueled this deep rage.
You can feel that rage in his writing.
Oh, absolutely. But then connected to that was the intellectual hunger. This relentless need for answers. Why? Why the hate? Why the cruelty? Why did his own family punish his questions?
So books were the food for that hunger.
Exactly. They gave him the tools, the concepts to understand his life, the society around him.
And the third level.
This is maybe the deepest. A spiritual or emotional hunger. The need for connection, for belonging, for self-worth. In a world constantly telling him he was nothing.
And when that wasn't met.
Profound alienation. Isolation. But crucially, it also forced him to create his own meaning. Through his art, he had to build his own sense of worth.
It sounds almost existentialist. Even before he met those guys in Paris, seeing the world as absurd, hostile sometimes, institutions failing him.
Totally. You can call it proto-existentialist. Identity isn't given, it's created. Forged through defiance, through acts of will.
Freedom as an internal state, yeah. Owning your thoughts.
Yes. Especially when everything outside is trying to crush you. His whole approach was defiant questioning. Never just accepting things.
And turning that pain, that rage into
sharp, incisive prose. Not just lashing out blindly, using adversity as raw material for art.
Amazing resilience.
Yeah.
Okay, so beyond these ongoing struggles, were there specific moments, like lightning strike moments, that really changed everything for him?
Definitely. We can probably pick out three really pivotal turning points.
Let's hear them. What's the first?
Well, we touched on it, but it bears repeating. Forging the note to borrow library books, discovering Mencken.
Right. The library card incident in Memphis. Why was that so transformative beyond just getting the books?
It was the moment I think he realized his rage wasn't just his rage. It wasn't unique. Mencken gave him a language, a validation for his dissent. It showed him literature could be a weapon.
It wasn't just reading anymore.
No, it solidified his ambition. This is what I want to do. I want to wield words like this. It was the true start of him taking control of his own education, his own mind.
Okay, a powerful start. What's the second turning point?
That moment as valedictorian, the refusal to read the pre-written speech.
Ah, yes. Standing up to the principal. More than just teenage rebellion, you said.
Oh, much more. It was his first major public act of intellectual integrity. He chose his own authentic voice over safety, over conformity.
Knowing the risks involved.
Absolutely. In the Jim Crow South, that was incredibly brave. It proved, maybe first to himself, that his mind was his own territory. No one controlled it unless he let them. It set a precedent for his whole life, really.
A declaration of intellectual independence. Okay, and the third, you mentioned a particularly brutal one.
Yeah, this one is rough. The staged fight with Harrison.
What exactly happened there?
He was working at an optical company in Jackson. He and another young black man, Harrison. Their white coworkers kept pushing them, goading them to fight each other for sport.
Just for entertainment.
Well, the
horrifying.
And they offered them money, $5 each. To stage a boxing match.
Did they do it?
They did, reluctantly. Filled with self-loathing, Wright describes it. Fighting each other while the white man watched and laughed.
Oh, God. Why was that so defining for him?
It was this visceral gut punch lesson in how racism works. How the system pits victims against each other, uses economic pressure for cruel entertainment, dehumanizes everyone involved.
Stripped away any innocence he might have had left.
Completely. It fueled his determination to get out, to escape that system entirely. Because staying, surviving physically, meant sacrificing your soul, participating in your own humiliation. It solidified his resolve to fight back, but with his mind, with his words.
Those are three incredibly powerful defining moments. Mm-hmm. So pulling back a bit, what are the broader lessons we can take from Wright's life? What does his struggle teach us today?
Well, first off, the idea that literacy is liberation. For him, books weren't just nice to have. They were essential tools for understanding reality, for confronting it. The first step to freedom.
That really comes through.
And also the sheer necessity of questioning authority. He refused to just blindly accept things, whether it was religious dogma or social norms. Critical thinking as self-preservation.
Especially in hostile environments.
Exactly. And finally, this idea that identity is forged, not given. The world tried to tell him who he was, a black boy with limits. His whole life was a fight to define himself through his choices, his defiance.
Powerful lessons. No. How do you see them connecting to us now?
Well, think about how pain can be transmuted into power. He didn't just suffer. He analyzed his suffering, transformed it into art that changed the world. It suggests our own wounds, our struggles can be sources of strength, of insight.
If we engage with them creatively.
Right. And also individual agency within systematic constraints. Mm. Even facing overwhelming racism and poverty, he believed in individual responsibility. You still have choices. You still have agency to preserve your dignity, to find ways to grow.
Even when the system pushes back hard.
Yes. And maybe most profoundly, his loneliness, that deep existential loneliness, feeling like an outsider because of your thoughts, your curiosity, that resonates, doesn't it?
It really does. Anyone who's felt different.
It poses that question for all of us. How do you keep your mind, your soul intact when the world feels hostile? His story is, in a way, a guide for that.
That's a really insightful connection. Okay, let's try to distill this incredible life into three final takeaways. What's the core emotional insight we should leave with?
I think it's the transformation of that profound physical, intellectual, spiritual into this incredible creative and analytical power. Mm. His journey from that scared, hungry kid to a global voice. It just shows that even the absolute worst circumstances can fuel extraordinary achievement if you have the courage, the intelligence, the determination.
That emotional core, the hunger, the loneliness turned into strength. It cuts across everything, race, time.
It really does. It's deeply human.
Okay. And intellectually, what's the key intellectual insight from Wright's work and life?
It's his sharp analysis of how oppression works psychologically, how racism isn't just laws, it's conditioning. It gets inside your head, makes you internalize limitations. That is so relevant today for understanding inequality.
And the resistance part.
His demonstration that agency always exists, even in the worst situations. But it takes constant vigilance, constant courage, and maybe the most revolutionary act, learning. Getting that library card, real liberation, often starts there, not necessarily with a big political movement first.
Wow. The library card is a revolutionary act. I like that. Okay, finally, what's a universal insight, a life lesson for all of us?
I think it's about the power of authentic truth-telling, even when it's costly. Wright refused to sugarcoat things, refused to make his experiences palatable. And that integrity, that refusal to compromise his truth, is what gave his work such impact.
So embracing the difficult truth.
Yes. Meaningful achievement often means accepting uncertainty, risking comfort, choosing the hard truth over the easy illusion. His life shows us that those deep hungers we have for meaning, connection, self-expression, they aren't weaknesses.
They're vital.
They're our most vital human traits. To be fully alive is to be hungry for more than you're given, and to spend your life in that passionate, defiant pursuit of what feeds your soul.
A powerful note to end on, that defiant pursuit.
Ekatra Foundation presents The Ekatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.